call to order the meeting of the City of Palm Coast Utilities Advisory Committee. We'll start with a pledge to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Call the roll. Call.
Robert Wieners.
Present.
Malcolm Kennedy.
Present.
Michael Hardiman.
Present.
Jack Pittman.
Present.
Victor Sarmiento.
Present.
And John Smart.
Yes. Next order of business is minutes of the previous meeting. Does anybody have any corrections or additions?
That's not typos, that's not.
Yep.
Agreed.
Correct those later. I'll go to old business, status of the underground wire ordinance. We're still waiting to get.
I got with Brian today. We're going to get on it Monday.
Okay.
And draft it and present it to my. And see how it's okay. If it's okay, I'm
okay.
Present to him.
next item of business is pharmaceutical disposal, and I think we have a guest that's going to enlighten us.
Major O'Brien.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. Do you want me? You're fine, or?
Yeah, just call.
Hey, Leo. You're good.
I'm Major O'Brien with the Sheriff's Office. I really was contacted today. Really short notice, and I think what everybody is kind of looking for is, from what I'm getting, is instead of disposing pharmaceutical drugs down the toilet and into the waterway, what do we do with it? We at the Sheriff's Office, probably about a year ago or two, we actually teamed up with Focus on Collegor, which is the coordinator, and I don't know if she's still there, but I believe she is, Chantel Waters. We've actually teamed up with them, and we did a campaign within the county. And we did it throughout the whole county. So we touched every area of the county, which was in Flagler Beach, Palm Coast, and also in Bunnell on the west side of the county. And what we did was they actually received some gift cards from local merchants like Target, Walmart, and we actually stood in front of the shopping centers there, the department stores, and had people bring in their pharmaceutical drugs and any other thing that they wanted to dispose of and put it into a bin. And then at the end of the day, we took all that down to the Sheriff's Office, and the Sheriff's Office has a big incinerary thing, like a 55-gallon drum, and it's all electric, and we put it in there and we burn them, and that's how we dispose of them. So nothing goes back into the waterway or anything else. But during that time, we found out a couple of things that we needed to change. It's okay for people to bring their drugs to us, but we had to look at it a different way because we were getting everything. Suppositories, fish oil, you know, vitamins and stuff like that. Really, we want to keep the scheduled drugs, scheduled narcotics off, you know, out of the waterway and stuff like that. You know, your natural, you know, your vitamins and stuff aren't going to hurt anybody. But the narcotics is what we were mainly after. So the next one that we do with Chantel and Focus on Flagler, we will probably kind of restrict it to just scheduled narcotics instead of having everything and go from that angle. But we were very successful in doing it, although we did find one thing that if you don't give somebody something, for some reason they don't like to give to you. So when we actually ran out of some of the cards, the little gift cards, I think they were like $5 or $10 gift cards that we received from Walmart and Target, people were kind of, I'll turn them in next time, type of deal. We'll wait for the next one. Our main focus is this. I mean, everybody knows about the pill mills and stuff like that. And really, you could probably go into almost any household now and find some type of hydrocodone in a cabinet, because that's what a lot of the doctors are prescribing now for pain and stuff like that. And as anything else, you know, you may take it one day or 2 days from there, then the pain kind of goes away, or it's bearable to where you're taking Motrin or Tylenol or something like that to help you through the pain, and then the rest of the pills sit in your cabinet for quite some time. But some of the houses that have been broken into, we have discovered that you know, they only went in for the drugs, and that was it. So one of the things was to try to combat that and keep it out of the waterway as well, because talking to everybody, either they didn't know what to do with them and they just left them in their cabinet, or they flushed them down the toilet or put them into the waterway. So that was kind of a two-pronged thing that we went after there. So Focus on Flavor is more of a team, targeting teens and stuff like that to keep the drugs and alcohol and tobacco away from kids. We teamed up with them as well, like I said. Any questions from them?
I think at our last meeting, what I brought to the committee's attention was that there's another national Take Back Drug Day, Prescription Drug Take Back Day, scheduled for April 30th. And I think that the sentiment here was that we'd like to get in tune with what the country is doing. It's generated from federal legislation, and I think that's one aspect. The other aspect that comes immediately to mind is that Volusia County has 5 locations where the citizens can take their materials 5 days a week down there. Now, we're not ready for 5 days a week, but I think we need something, and this is good that you're speaking about. It's a first step, but I think we want to go beyond that and have a depository and have it also include such things as intravenous solutions, injectables, and needles also. And the fact that it's become a motive for criminals is something that must be confronted, I feel, somewhat over this this one time. Do you have a date for this to occur?
No, and okay. We need to get in touch with Chantel, because what we'll do is we'll partner with her.
Yeah.
And I definitely agree with you, and I'm very familiar with the project that Sheriff Johnson in Volusia County is doing. And what he did with that was he put it at all his substations throughout his county. That's what he did there. And we would definitely put one up at the substation up here in Palm Coast. And this is the problem that we run into. It's not a problem, but it's kind of hard to do a 5-day thing, because those pills have to be picked up every single day. Obviously, they can't sit in a box or anything else like that, because there's actually statute that governs that, that they have to be, you know, people can get arrested. The average citizen could get arrested if you take a pill and put it into just a plain container. It has to be properly labeled and everything else. And that's why the sheriff's office, even with Focus on Flagler, the sheriff's office actually has to get involved in it to transport from point A to point B, and then we actually dispose of them. So 5 days, I agree with you, it's going to be very time-consuming on a 5-day thing. But the sheriff and the chief actually have tasked me to do that. We just have to come up logistically how we're going to accomplish a 5-day thing. Because obviously we don't want it sitting in there, you know. I mean, we'll secure it to a certain degree in a box, Same thing with the needles. You know, we'll destroy the needles, we'll put them in disposable bins and everything, and send them off to be incinerated. But we can control that. But a five-day thing is going to be very difficult for us right now. I'm not saying it can't be done, but a five-day is going to be very difficult for us to do on a five-day thing. But it's a good project. I just don't know what type of numbers he's getting down there, because, like I said, he just started the program down there, so I really don't know.
Yes, he did. Yeah, that's right. It's brand new.
How
a month ago or something.
Yeah, it was a month ago, 30 days out, I think it is, or 30 days back. So really to see what type of numbers he's getting as far as who's bringing him in. Because a lot of it is driven, and it was amazing when we did our first one in the county. It was amazing that it was just driven based on what they were going to receive from us. It's kind of the same project that they have over in Orlando. They do sneakers for guns. Orlando did that. And what they would do is they would give you a sneaker, you know, sneakers for every gun that was brought in, which was real huge over there, and they continue to do it over there. So I think they call it Kicks for Guns or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's the exchange program. So it's amazing on how people will give you things if you're going to give them something back. And we're all for giving them something back. And it was great that Walmart and Target got involved in the community, of course. Target is a huge supporter of law enforcement and really for the youth. So.
Well, I'd like to comment. I would be content with one day a month if it was a date certain,
mm-hmm.
like the third Saturday of the month or the last Saturday. One day a month would be enough for me, because that would be, I think most citizens would be sufficiently civic-minded to, without a $5 or $10 charge, take their excess, and we're talking about prescriptions, we're talking about the whole gamut of drugs that would otherwise go down the toilet.
Right. Yeah, but not aspirin, such as you.
Yeah, I mean, when I refer to that, it's really, you know, the first time we did it, just we received, it was, vitamins and stuff like that. We don't, you know, we're not going to incinerate that stuff. Really.
I do have a question. The question comes to mind, really, and it may be harmless chemical that we have to deal with at the beginning, but when you mix them all together down the water, seems that chemical reactions will happen between them. So something harmful may come out of that. So I don't know. I'm not a chemical.
And I was just going to say, neither am I. When it gets all mixed in the water and it dissolves and everything else, where is it going? How's it? I mean, do we want it in the water? No. I mean, obviously that is the main thing, is to keep it out of the water that we drink and use. So, but. And the other thing is to keep it out of the hands of potentially kids that could take it and get hurt. But go ahead.
All I was going to say is even landfill is a problem, because that ends up in the water.
True. Yes.
Yeah. Related comment, and that is that if you're incinerating materials within the department, you really should account for the ash that's produced from the incineration.
Mm-hmm. It actually
that should go to Sharples or whatever,
right?
But you should clear that for the record.
Mm-hmm. We don't put anything back into anything. We dispose of everything, so it's not ash and everything else.
But they make a point of saying that the ash that produced it at a professional facility winds up as building materials. After supposedly they've been able to show in the lab that it's of no harm to anyone in that chemical state, you've got ash left, but it should be accounted for in the end, because that is the end
right.
of your action there, your mm-hmm. procedure. Yeah.
I think one of the concerns of this committee is that if the EPA does get to the point where they're going to enforce regulations on pharmaceutical removal, that it could be a very costly operation for the utility. And That's why we've been pursuing this for like about a year and a half, maybe 2 years. We've gone to the drug stores, we've gone to the hospital, and you know, no one really wants to grab a hold of it. And they're, I think most of them are leery because it says you must have a police officer present when they dispose of it.
Correct. And that's the problem. The drugstores and everything, they'll dispense them out to you, but nobody has come up with that solution of when I've got leftovers, what do I do with them? And that's the problem that everybody's running into, is that when they just remain in the cabinets.
Well, it isn't everybody. There is a drugstore here which will take unused pharmaceuticals from customers. So the customer buys, if the customer buys his prescriptions there, then what's left over, they will take it back. At least that was said to me verbally.
But they won't take narcotics.
I was going to say, by statute, they are not allowed to take them back. They can dispense, but they cannot take them off the street. And I don't know where they send them.
It's not a satisfactory thing because we haven't talked about needles and solutions.
Correct.
And injectables that I mentioned.
Any other comments or questions for the major?
I wanted to comment on Malcolm's comment and about it going to the landfill. You guys were the ones that found the DEP document that told what could be done with unspent drugs, and it goes through this process of how you can dilute it and put it in a container with kitty litter and seal it all up, and then you can throw it away in your trash.
It's become outdated now.
But those that. That's because it's hauled to a sanitary landfill that is lined. So technically, it does not get into the groundwater. Unlike when you flush it down the toilet, it goes completely through the wastewater treatment process. No wastewater treatment processes remove those chemicals from the water, so when it ends up as wastewater sludges or effluents, then they can get into the groundwater. So there's a difference. The DEP's recommendation is that their acceptable level is for it to end up in a landfill, but it's sealed in a container with litter and all that other stuff. And there's specific instructions how to do that. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Let me ask you something. If that is, you know, if that's one way to dispose of your drugs, instead of it being flushed or put down the drain, would it be beneficial to the board and to the water treatment center to put something out in your monthly bills and stuff like that? Because some of the questions that we had from citizens coming up is they didn't know what to do with it, or how to do it, or how to get rid of it. We can, you know, put it on our website and stuff like that to, you know, how to dispose of drugs in a safe environment and dilute it in the water and put that out on our website. But, you know, keep it out of the water way is to put that into a flyer or something to go out to the citizens and let them know that.
Well, actually, as a result of the efforts of this committee, we have them.
Okay.
They went out and found the brochure. We had it. With the permission of DEP, we had it reproduced and inserted in our bills. I don't know whether we've done any other, whether it's been put in, in the newsletter or anything, but we have done at least one insert in the bill.
And I can get, I'll get with the sheriff and put something in on our website as well. Because not always, you know, somebody makes it out to these drop-off spots.
So, absolutely.
So right. It's another avenue to get rid of them and not put it into the waterway and stuff like that. So I get with the sheriff and kind of suggest that, and we'll come up with an instructional thing to put out on the website.
Will you kind of push this April 30th date then
yes.
for us?
I will get with the sheriff and relay everything.
That's a way to get in step with what's going on in the whole country.
Have you talked to Chantel on this?
I have not. I have her name and number, and I intend to call her.
Because we'll probably partner with her again. If she's going to shoot for an April 30th, I'll get with her as well to see where she is as far as doing another one. And because they actually have a grant that they actually apply for it, and they have to show numbers as well on what they're doing within the community. And that's through the school board. Focus on Flagler's through the school board, and they have to meet expectations through the grant and everything else. So if we're going to do it, I mean, I can shoot for an April 30th date, and that's what I'll shoot. That will be my target, and I'll get with her as well if you would, too. Mm-hmm. We'll go at her from both sides for an April 30th date.
All right. And that'll be a start.
Yeah, and then we'll go from there. Since I know, you know, for us, it's a huge undertake as far as man hours. I have to pay somebody to come in, you know, on the weekend. We normally do it on the weekend, seeing that's when your biggest people are off. I have to pay at least two people to work the incinerary until everything is completed, because that cannot go into our evidence lockers or anything else, because it's not evidence. It's kind of, you know, we're burning it. But I also, at each location, if we do a location like we did last time, we have to actually put a deputy at each location to stand by until everything is collected. And normally, I think at the last one, we did it for about 6 hours. We actually stood out there, 7 hours. We actually stood out there, and then we took everything down to the sheriff's office and burned it down there. So it's a huge undertake. It's an all-day project for us. We're willing to do it, and we'll take on that task. So just to keep that in mind. And we'll also look into drop-offs at the substations that we have, too. And that's going to be, we'll have to work around that.
You accept ammunition at your substations?
No more. Because what happens is we then become the depository for, and then have to find a place to get rid of it. So, and like I just said, it's not evidence, and that's the problem. We work on the basis of criminal investigations. And if we're ordered by a judge to take firearms on for domestic violence or something, we're ordered by the judge to do that. But as far as somebody just coming in, we just had somebody come in and drop off 3 buckets of ammunition. Well, it's at the sheriff's office expense now to get rid of this or find someplace to get rid of this and to take it to an incinerary and burn it and pay somebody to go do that. So we no longer do that. We did in the past. Yes, we did. But we no longer do that anymore. And we're running out of room.
As I said, if we could just have one day serving a month, yeah, would satisfy me, for sure. Because it would be better than what we have now, which is nothing.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
I think, you know, if you would just impress upon the sheriff that we do have some very real concerns about this system, as far as the water supply and the treatment that may be required.
And he was aware of that at the last time we did one, too, just to let you know. That's one of the things that we did discuss as well.
Yeah.
So I will bring that back to him. I just left him a few minutes ago and told him I was coming up. So I will relay that back to him when I get back to the office. And I will let him know your concerns.
Any other questions or discussion? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. Thank you. Next order of business would be any new business that the committee members would like to discuss. If not, we'll participate. We'll ask for public participation. Anybody in the public audience that would like to participate? No? Okay. Let's get to that. And we'll go to Richard for some updates.
still say, Richard?
Yeah.
Yeah. For some reason, they put numbers in their zeros. And then they, obviously, the blue line is the new line, 2011. And, you know, we left off last year here. And so this is December. This is January. Actually had a little rain in the last month, so climbing a little bit in January and February. That's the shallow well field. And the Florida aquifer. You can see the Florida aquifer started climbing back in December. And continued to climb. Not sure why. I mean, obviously, rainfall has a lot to do with it, but how much we're pumping has a lot to do with what the static levels are doing. So, production. Again, the top line, the is the max day, and the bottom bar charts, water plant 1 in dark blue, and water plant 2 in teal, and water plant 3 in the light baby blue water. The bar charts show the average day, and the line showing the max day. Things are a little dry, and people are starting their spring gardening, so you can see our max day is climbed significantly in the month of February. The average day is taking a turn to go. Last year, December, January, February didn't really start until March. Still below what we were
last year. When does irrigation go back to 2 days a week?
Daylight saving.
When's that?
Another week.
A week or 2 weeks away.
So that's going to spike tremendously then.
Well, it will change. Whether it'll spike tremendously, it remains to be seen. We have found that over the more recent years. Let me see. I can't get you this month's data, but I can show you a chart here. This one here. This goes all the way back to 1999. Basically, every single day is charted on there. So each one of these little bitty lines is a day. And you can see here, and I think our last data on here is probably. October or so, but you can see how
hopefully dry year, wet year, but we steadily climbed up and we're still climbing here. And '08, and then it dropped off significantly in 2009-2010. I'm guessing, first of all, a lot of that is probably irrigation of new homes. During the peak of the building, people were, you know, builders were watering like it was going out of style because they were getting down new sod and they were just watering the heck out of new sod from potable system. Homeowners come in, maybe they reduce the amount of irrigation, they put in a well, whatever. But the builders had the water to get the new plants and sod established. So there was a lot of water being used during those boom years for new homes. Obviously, we don't have any of that going on right now. We're very little. I think there's conservation going on that, you know, people are more in tune. And we have definitely pushed conservation. It's in the newsletter every quarter. It's in the utility bill frequently, and every time we're out in the public, the Citizens Academy and public presentations and things like that, we're always talking conservation. Some of that might be in as a result of our efforts to get people to conserve water, and some of it might just be economic times and they feel they can't afford a water bill. And then actually cutting back on the usage for the development. But who knows why? We really don't know until we get another significant dry spell. But obviously, there is some impact from the dry weather because we're seeing it already.
Who's doing the flushing of the system?
Pardon?
Flushing of the system.
What about
it? Is that the regular routine that your department or my department?
No. The utility department does the flushing for water quality. The fire department uses the hydrants for fighting fires and for exercise, but maintenance of the hydrants and maintenance of the water quality is strictly utility. And we don't typically flush hydrants for hydrant maintenance. We visit each hydrant once a year, but flushing the hydrant for maintenance is not much water.
I was under the impression that it was done in conjunction with the, you know, when you alternate the disinfection process.
No, we have to flush water constantly to maintain water quality, and the disinfectant residual, which no matter which residual we're using, whether using chloramines or free chlorine, we have to flush to maintain water quality all the time. We do probably increase the flushing activity a little bit when we're trying to move the disinfectant change, try to get it done out there quickly. We might do a little extra flushing, but generally we flush on a routine basis to maintain water quality, especially at the extremities and dead ends.
Because inversely, the growth of bacteria that are not killed by regular chlorine process, that's the one that you are addressing, right?
The change in the disinfection process, first of all, our preferred method is chlorine. So it's a combination of chlorine and ammonia. And the water tastes better, doesn't have any odor. However, that and chloramines has a fairly sustainable residual. And so when you get out into the extremities and systems and you measure the chlorine, the disinfectant residual, you'll find the chloramines, it's the residual will last longer. The problem is the chloramines isn't as effective as frequently at fighting bacterial growth. So three times a year now, we've got it on a regular schedule, we'll switch from chloramines to free chlorine. And free chlorine, although more effective in fighting the bacterial growth, it doesn't sustain its residual as easily or as long. So So it could cause more flushing, the need for more flushing when we're on three quarters than if we're on the chlorine. So the idea is we switch back and forth. With our main, we stay in chlorines most of the time, but three times a year we switch to three chlorines.
Well, that's true. And that's the reason why I was up to it inquiring about the use of peroxide, which is a lot more effective in addressing all those biofilms, biofoulings, and all those bacteria that are become resistant to chlorine. And that's the reason why. And if there's no flushing done in conjunction with that, there's a lot of, you know, the dead ends. Yeah.
Well, and we're investigating that. I can tell you that we have done a number of studies relative to our disinfectant process, studies that are done by experts outside experts, not us. We use people like Malcolm Burney and CPH, people like that, to do our disinfectant studies. And I don't know what the issues are with peroxide. My understanding is that it is very costly.
Yes.
Compared to the chloramines. I'm sure it was considered when we did the disinfectant studies, as was ozone and other methods. And the recommended method for us, our water quality and our situation was the chloramines. Because years and years ago, we used to do free chlorine. No chloramines at all. And with the changes in the disinfectant byproduct rules, we were forced to go to chloramines forced to go to a different method, and that's how we ended up with chloramines.
I think there for a while back you were putting some automatic flushing units at dead ends. Are you still doing that?
Well, they're not really. They're not as sophisticated as it sounds. All we've done is put timers on an irrigation control valve and hooked it to a fire hydrant.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they don't do any chlorine analyzing or anything like that. We just, areas that we know that we have to flush, so many thousand gallons a day for it to be effective, we may have put some automatic, some timer flushers. We've had in the past, we've had constant flows, where back when our population was very sparse, some of these areas basically needed constant flushing. So we basically cracked open a hydrant and let it run 24/7 because you had to move that much water. There's areas where we have taken fresh water out of the system and returned it back into the raw water supply that feeds back to the plant. We have a recirculation pipe up on A1A that we can bring water all the way from marine land back to the elevated tank because that was such a long run with such low usage that water quality was a constant problem, so we, rather than waste the water, we build a pipeline and bring it all the way back. And there at the tank, we can rechlorinate. We had a system similar to that up at the end of Matanzas Woods Parkway before Matanzas Woods filled out. We were actually bringing water back into the raw water system up there on a regular basis. I can remember back way back when Pine Lakes wasn't built out, and we were taking fresh water out of Pine Lakes and putting it in the raw water system because there wasn't enough homes in Pine Lakes to keep water quality.
Yeah, I think those are done because control the growth of bacteria on sandy waters.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's the reason why I asked about the flushing, because that actually assists the process of actually replacing all those and
right.
Controlling the growth of bacterial growth.
Yeah.
One question I have.
Yes.
I try to read the weekly updates mm-hmm. every week. And I noticed in the last couple of weeks there seems to be a huge decrease in the number of customers shut off for non-payment. Is that?
Don't get too excited.
Okay.
No, actually, last week was a very low number because we had a five-week month, so there's no bills going out for that fifth week, and the follow-up due date a month and a half later or whatever, then there's no cutoff. So, you can't be too encouraged by that. That's
okay.
Sure. It's tough because, you know, a lot of people deal with tough times, but we learned from our previous years of experience, if you get very lenient on your cutoffs. I can remember with Florida Water, there was they would go through and only turn off people that their bills were over $150 or something like that, or we would only do 50 cutoffs in 1 week. And the next thing you know, you have people that are hundreds of dollars in arrears and they can't ever get caught up. So we're pretty diligent with our cutoffs, and we work with customers when they can't pay. We work out payment plans and things like that. So the numbers are pretty high, generally speaking.
They're usually up in the 200s, I guess, for a week. Okay, any other questions or comments for Richard? I guess, John, you're the man of the hour.
Well, you read the paper, you know.
Yes.
The stormwater order redirection, the head topic. The other things that we're doing, we have completed and done quality assurance on the inventory of all the streetlights in Popco. Took one guy about 3 months to do, and he did that probably 4 hours a day. But the next thing is we'll complete our inventory of traffic signals, which is partway done. We started with our traffic engineer, and we've probably got all that information in different places. We want it all in one place so we can do that. We have. They're rebuilding right now two control structures, one at Mulberry Creek by the Yacht Club. That one is almost completed. I think this week we're going to have it so that there will be no water flow through there except over the control structure. And we're pouring concrete and finishing up. We expect substantial completion on the ditch 10 here, which is just downstream from Wild Oaks, if you know where that subdivision is on. Over lane, and then repaired two other structures in association with that job. So maybe we need some repairs, so we're doing that while we are working on ditch 10 there in close to proximity to that. And then our major state revolving fund finance projects, which are replacement of two canal crossings under roads. They were major culvert pipes building. We pour them out and we're putting in fabricated reinforced concrete box culverts. Those are going very well, but they're still under progress. One's located on Sesame at Seminole Woods. South on Sesame, and then another one is located on London Drive at Londonderry, close to Londonderry. So those are the projects that are taking up most of our time. We're also, of course, doing survey and design for soil rehabilitation. That's an ongoing effort to try and stay well ahead of. Ideally 2 miles ahead of the public works crews. So the dry weather is a blessing and a curse because the production rate that the public works stormwater crews have is very good right now. But it's in dry weather, so we'll get into the rainy season maybe in June. Typically it's June, July, August, September. So we expect the production level on the soil rehabilitation to slow down, but our production level, because surveying is a big part of that, will slow down a little bit too. Obviously, you can't survey when it's raining, so but hopefully we'll be able to stay up with that. I don't see any problem with that effort right now.
Is there a new traffic light going up at Royal Palms and Route 1? Is that
Royal Palms and Route 1, that is a project that is the project manager is Schuyler County, the contractor is Halifax. That was funding from DOT to the school board. The school board is proposing a yard for their trucks, or for their buses, on the west side of US 1 at Royal Palms there.
Where their old storage facility was.
Right. And so they're anticipating large volumes of traffic there. There's a turn lane on US 1 and the traffic signals now. We coordinated with DOT, and because it's in the city limits, we said we would like them to conform with our standards for our standard traffic signals so they look like a pump post. One of them on a mast arm. We don't want string bolts. Should be black. It should have the name of the street identified on it, and it should have a light on it, a regular street light on top of it. So they were very generous. We had to pay for those improvements, obviously, but they did make sure it conforms to that. So you can see that. And you'll also see one there is one that works for Whiteview Parkway and US 1.
Mm-hmm. So
that'll go up, and I think Kansas Woods also. Good morning, there's one down south on Seminole Woods Parkway and US 1. You'll see those in the future.
Any other questions for John or comments? Thank you, John. Next item would be discussions of matters not on the agenda. And I have a letter that I'd like to read. This is addressed to the Honorable John Netz. It says, Dear John Netz, Dear Mayor Netz, it is with sadness that I'm advising you of my retirement from the City of Palm Coast Utility Advisory Committee. I have been involved with this committee and precursor of this committee since just before the incorporation of the City of Palm Coast in 1999. During this period, I had the honor of serving as chairman. Two major accomplishments of this committee, of which I am most pleased with, are the battery collection system now in place and the developing prescription drug collection program. The battery collection program is removing a tremendous amount of heavy metals from our landfills and our water treatment facilities that treat the leachate from these landfills. The promotion of awareness of the dangers of disposal of prescription drugs into the wastewater system by dumping them in the toilet is ongoing, and I'm sure will become the norm once people realize the dangers of having drugs in any water course, even the wastewater course. Although I would like very much to continue my service on this committee, I find that it conflicts with my volunteering efforts on the fundamentals of engineering and the professional engineering exam committees that I have participated in for 22 years. Most years I only had to miss one or two meetings, but for whatever reason, that has changed, and now the conflicts seem to be two out of three meetings. Because of this, I have decided to resign, and I'm sure the city will find another volunteer who will serve the committee well. I would be terribly remiss if I didn't compliment my fellow members of the UAC, as they have given up their time and expertise and participated in many varied deliberations, always thinking of how we may better our city. In addition, Richard Adams and John Moten are two consummate leaders in their respective areas, and the city is fortunate to have their services. Their input, expertise, and experience has always been of the utmost value to the UAC members in all the areas discussed. Finally, I want to thank the City of Palm Coast for the opportunity of serving my city in some very small way for the past 12 years. Sincerely, Frank, I can't read his last name. Frank Hutchison. Any comments on the letter? Or I think it was a good tribute to the committee, to the members' membership. Are there any other members? Any other matters that want to come up here?
Do we have to elect somebody to look for somebody?
No, we're still looking for volunteer.
There's an advertisement in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Well, that's the process that the clerk's office handles.
Have we had any leads? Have we had any offers?
The clerk's office will do that process and present the candidates to council for their appointment. We'll know when we know.
Any other comments or questions? Not all. Accept the motion for adjournment.
The motion for adjournment?
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.